Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the interview with Dr. Betsy Zhang on October the 17th, 1982. This is tape 3.
Lots of pictures. I don't want to bore you with them.
So this is the same as...
No, they're all mixed up. I haven't had time to...
How long did you spend in Borneo with your husband?
I was only 9 months there.
This 9 months?
They're all mixed up. I should sort them out.
This was probably back...
When was that, the 1960s?
No, I was there in 47 and 8.
Oh, 47 and 48.
Must have been an interesting experience in any case.
I delivered the baby for Dr. Eng on October the 8th, and I sailed for the Orient on October the 10th.
That's so quite an experience. This is a lovely couple.
Well, it's just one of the old pictures that I haven't seen for 30 years or 35 years.
How'd you find them? Just happened
just
to see them yesterday?
I was looking for the projector.
Uh-huh.
And he said the projector was so clogged up that it wasn't projecting, it wasn't working. So I said, never mind, we can rent it. And it shows how the
reactions aren't that good.
How the
usually
British lord over their colonies.
Is that right?
You bet. I found that out.
You mean just by traveling
in
Southeast Asia?
I never dreamed that the British were so high-handed. I thought the Dutch were pretty bad, but they put on a dog, you know, and they had the people sort of cowed, and I couldn't stand that.
What other countries in Southeast Asia were you had occasion then to visit? Was it just
Singapore.
Borneo? You went to Singapore in that trip?
I was in Singapore for 10 days, and the man that was, whose guest I was a banker and a plantation owner, and a very well-to-do man. But apparently, in his younger days, he was not very well-to-do. So he married the Chinese, Capitan. They call him the Capitan. And he had the power of life and death over the Chinese people. And he had diabetes, and he was half-blind. But he smoked, chain smoked all day. I have a picture of him and his family in the breakfast nook. But you probably don't have time to... did you turn off the music in the kitchen?
I don't think I did.
Maybe I did it because it was going.
Oh, it's all right. I don't think we have any problem with that.
Oh. It wasn't that then.
No.
Anyway, 160 people in his family.
Is that right? Immediate family?
My and Lord. He had a number two wife. And
yeah.
I thought, now that I'm going to visit him at his Singapore home on the waterfront, I wonder how he's going to introduce me to his number two wife. See, when he was poorer, he married this Capitan's wife.
Uh-huh.
I mean daughter. Who didn't have any Chinese education or English education. And she had just the one son, and he was a little bit retarded, to say the least. But his second wife was a well-educated Chinese woman, and educated in Chinese. And her children were as different from her son as day and night. And I wondered how he was going to introduce me. So all he did was, this is the other Mrs. Wong. That's all.
Very
took
cool
me
and
upstairs,
subtle.
Nothing to it.
Yeah.
And I learned that the number two Mrs. Wong cut his toenails. But he had to sleep in number one Mrs. Wong's bedroom.
What a strange relationship.
And then on Sundays, they wanted all the women out of the house.
Because
that was his day to howl.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited all his business friends for a banquet and a swim.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to get ourselves to the movies or someplace. So I used to wander around the Singapore stores. I didn't want to go to the movies.
How long were you there in Singapore?
I was there for 10 days because there was a strike.
Uh-huh.
And I had to wait for the boat. And Mr. Wong, the banker, was to take me there. But he stayed away from... you see, it's just like even in San Francisco. Let's see, in 1925, the women was on one side and the men was on one side. And in Singapore, not knowing, I invited both men and women to our first party for the governor on Valentine's Day.
Then
when it was so hot, I wore my sort of a summer suit.
Yes.
That was cut here, open,
mm-hmm.
to here.
Oh.
And my goodness, it was shocking.
Big scandal, huh?
Oh! And then, one day, I drove our, what I call the Green Hornet, the Green 47 Cadillac. Their roads were so small. Sam wrote to them and said, is it all right for me to bring a Cadillac, a 47 Cadillac? Are your roads and everything okay? The British were so proud, they said everything was fine. And when we got there, the roads were so small, we couldn't use it. But I had 5 servants and 2 chauffeurs and 2 gardeners. And I couldn't stand it, the slow motion.
That's the way things operated.
Nearly drove me crazy. So I finally ended up with 1 woman servant. That was enough.
Uh-huh.
And 1 chauffeur for Sam.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And he could only drive the Ford Prefet.
Uh-huh.
And I was the only one that knew how to drive the 47 Hydromatic Cadillac.
Must have been the only one down there.
The only one. And they hadn't seen one, but America couldn't have them then either.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Through Sam's connections,
yeah.
He was able to get a hydromatic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so we had trouble with it when we got to King City.
That's in California?
Uh-huh. Brand new Cadillac. And I took Cynthia and Constance, who were going to China. I'm going to sit on this, and that'll
sure.
be easier for me.
Yes, I think it's probably more comfortable.
No, I have to sit high so I can get up.
Okay.
And and I'll be darned if all of a sudden it didn't stop in King City.
Is this the first trip with that new car?
First trip to Los Angeles with a new car.
I'll be darned.
And I said, what in the world happened? Well, we went to the, unfortunately, we were right on Auto Row in King City, which isn't too far, 50 miles from Salinas.
That's right.
And I never heard of King City before in my life. Anyway, we had to be towed 50 miles.
Oh, my.
Because their man...
Back to Salinas?
Yeah. No, their man had gone to Detroit to learn how to do the automatic.
Uh-huh.
The hydromatic. And there was nobody there who knew how to do anything for a hydromatic. So after we got towed to Salinas was having a rodeo.
Oh, yes, very
And
fast.
Everybody was busy. So we waited hours and hours in the hotel lobby. And, don't mind.
Oh, my, that's pretty good.
We waited in the hotel lobby, and finally they got a man who said he could fix it. And it's not that one, it's that one.
Oh, okay.
If you don't
fine,
mind.
That's the problem.
Because the light is right in my eye.
Yeah, it's getting to be afternoon,
okay.
Getting brighter.
Uh-huh.
It's better now?
Yeah. But this doesn't bother me because I don't have to look at it.
Lift this back up.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, that's nicer.
Anyway, they finally fixed it so we could get home. And about, a couple of weeks after I got it home, all of a sudden down here at Oakland and Grand, it went clonk and then quit.
Oh.
So I said, this is something awful. So I called the service department of Cadillac, and they said they couldn't do anything about it. They'd have to come. That's all right. Uh-huh. It's my face. I've had the pain for 13 years.
Oh.
I think it was from digging out an impacted tooth that injured that nerve.
Oh, I see.
So I've learned to live with it. Anyway, they said that if I pay for the labor, they'd give me a new engine.
They should on a guarantee or something like that.
So finally I got a new engine.
But that's the car you took to Southeast Asia to use anyway.
I have a picture of
pretty gutty.
Standing next to that.
Yeah.
And then when we got there, the Chinese were so anxious to show the British off that they wanted us to have a constabulary, or they call the police constabulary over there, at the front and back gate.
Mm.
And I said, oh no, I don't want that. You know, being from here, I wasn't afraid of anything.
Yeah.
Now I am. Anyway, one day I wanted the gardener for something, and I went to the back door and I said, Sabah! Sabah! And he was grinning from ear to ear, and I couldn't figure out why he was so happy and running so fast, only to find out I had called him Pal.
Oh!
Isn't that cute? I mean, I never dreamed. I thought that was his name, Sabah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think it was Sabah. I can't remember exactly.
Uh-huh.
But everywhere that we went, there were just mobs and mobs of people.
Chinese
and Malay.
The Malay were interested in China?
Oh, yes. They came. And they were called, the heads were called Tatu.
Uh-huh.
The Tatus came. And the head of the headhunters came.
Oh.
But every time they came and met us, Sam got the flowers and then he'd hand them to me.
That's why in the picture you're holding flowers.
Yeah, right? As if I was being married to that headhunter. Isn't that funny?
Was this the first mission from China to that area?
No, the first consulate.
The first consulate. Yeah.
And they wanted Sam to be the one to establish it. And when we got there, I there's a picture of me looking a little frightened. I had never seen so many people come to meet us, and you could see the sort of fear in my face, because they shut down all the schools and all the businesses, and they had everybody turn out at the docks to go meet us.
Mm-hmm.
See, the Chinese had been evidently petitioning the government for years,
mm-hmm,
to let them establish a Chinese consulate.
I see.
And finally, they got Sam.
Yeah.
But the reason I think they appointed Sam was because he's British educated.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And knew their protocol and knew their ways.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so that was just fine. Only I was too American. And the minute I opened my mouth, they said, oh, you're American. And for 6 months, I was the only American there by legal, you know. I was the only legal American.
Uh-huh.
And there was no American there for 6 months until some Americans came to build an airstrip. But I just acted like I always acted here, you know.
Was that the most different experiences you have through the years you have been to different countries?
Well, I went to Europe by myself because Sam wouldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
This was just a tour?
Yeah, oh, yes, and medical.
Oh, was it professional as well?
And medical. and I went to 9 countries in Europe. And then I went to Mexico, in Mexico City, but it was on an Easter weekend, and I didn't realize that Catholic countries make such a big to-do about Easter. And I wanted to go to Acapulco.
Oh, yes. Great resort.
And it was booked tight, so I couldn't make that. And then all the stores were closed except the Jewish stores. And everything I bought cost more.
In Mexico?
Yeah, because...
Jewish stores in Mexico?
The Jewish stores would charge more because the Mexican stores were closed.
Yeah, indeed.
So I got stuck. But it was all right. I bought 2 pairs of alligator shoes and 2 handbags and, I don't know, some paintings. A few things, yeah.
In the diplomatic life, your husband, besides Borneo, was he consul somewhere else?
Oh,
other countries?
He was in Europe, and he was he was in Japan with his father-in-law.
I see.
And he was, where else? He was in Baja, California.
Oh, he was Mexican. He was a consul in Mexico.
And
as well.
When we went to Tijuana for the Rice Bowl parade,
remember
Rice Bowl during the war?
Well, no. Tell us.
Oh, well, in order to raise enough money for the war against the Japanese, we had it, all the money went to the Rice Bowl. And the Rice Bowl things, my husband was sent down to San Diego and Southern California.
Was there a parade in San Diego, or?
Well, lots of things going on.
Los Angeles?
And then that's when I was still in charge of the Chinese Babies Aid. And that's why the Chinese Babies Aid had to close. The money was going to China to fight the Japanese.
I see.
And we didn't have enough money for it.
Were they also conducting fundraising in Mexico with Mexican Chinese?
Oh, no, not Mexico.
Southern California.
Baja.
The Baja. How about Los Angeles?
Los Angeles.
Your husband would, and you would have to be concerned about raising
money
there,
too? Well, we
had
to show up for dinners and things, you know.
I see.
Then there were all kinds of dinners and cocktail parties. So Dr. Laura Slam, who's half Chinese, said to me, oh, I remember you when I went to a meeting out at Mrs. Hearst's place, out here at Pleasanton, where I think now it's a high-class jail, isn't it?
I don't know. That's Phoebe Hearst?
Phoebe Hearst's home.
Yeah.
Laura Slam said to me, oh, I remember you used to come in dripping with jewelry and furs. And the only reason was I was delivering babies as well as in general practice. And I'd have to go to these parties and cocktail parties and what have you, and Madame Chang's dinner and everything. And I'd be all dressed up in my evening clothes and furs. But I would stop at the maternity hospital as well as at Mary during the blackout.
So you were dressed very fine and practicing medicine in the hospital.
And I didn't know that I was a gossip.
Oh.
But the reason for it is there was no point in coming home and changing and going down again. Because you see, you can tell by one look whether your patient is doing well or not.
Sure.
And a report from the nurse doesn't tell you a darn thing. So I believe in one look. And because when I came back from Europe, I said to Rose, I said, Rose, your mother's had a heart attack. And she said, well, Dr. Jerry, how can you tell? You haven't even examined her yet. Her mother was waiting in the waiting room with some other patients. And I said, I can tell. And when I checked her, it was. And her mother died a few days later.
Oh, that's too
after
bad.
Breakfast. But you know, when you know your patient and you're trained to observe things, one look tells you an awfully lot. Even the way a person walks. Or the sound of the patient's voice. I worked with Dr. Ryder,
mm-hmm.
who was the with the first psychiatrist
mm-hmm.
in America, Dr. S. Ware Mitchell. And my first and second year in Philadelphia, I worked for Dr. Ryder.
Does that mean he was a student of Freud, or?
No, I was just there to earn some money.
I see. Dr. Ryder, though, was probably a student of Freud.
No, she was a physician, not a psychiatrist.
That's okay.
And in those days, they believed in the salt baths and continuous baths.
I see.
And all sorts of things. Anyway, it's a long story, so I won't take that up. But it was a very interesting experience for me.
Well, you mentioned practicing. Curious to know, you were affiliated with the Oakland Hospitals?
Not anymore. I'm
but you were.
You were.
I was with all of the hospitals during the war.
San Francisco and Oakland?
No, no.
Just the Oakland Hospital.
I dropped Jackson Chinese Hospital. I was connected
you were with
the
them
Chinese
too?
Hospital before I came over here. But I came to Oakland when I married Sam in Ford.
I see.
And lived here and started at Merritt Hospital.
Merritt.
But there are only two doctors that I know of that are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
So when Miss Murray, the head of the Oakland Health Department, came back retired from Honolulu, she came to my office and she said, well, Dr. Jeff, you're the only doctor I know who is neither gone or dead. I said, well, I'm glad I'm not dead.
Did you ever serve in any officials' positions, like chief of staff or something for a hospital?
Oh, no. Because I'm in general practice.
Your own private practice, so you would...
No, general family practice.
Okay.
They call it family practice.
I see.
Now. But I enjoy that much more because I had a closer contact with the patients. And being a woman, I didn't have to have a nurse.
Oh, I see.
See, on account of the rape and various other things, a man has to have a nurse there to protect him.
Yes, yes.
And
also you have a better confidence with women patients then.
And no, the strange part of my practice is that 75 to 80% of my patient load was either boys or men. Isn't that strange?
Is that right? Oh.
Very strange. But it seems that I seem to click or have rapport with the male mind.
Uh-huh.
Because I make quick decisions.
Yes.
And it's either right or wrong. There are no gray areas.
Well,
with my patients, I have one that used to go down to Cabwell's for 20 times and still can't decide whether or not to buy that hat. Now that would drive me crazy. I would walk into a store if I liked the shoes and if they fit, okay. In 5 minutes, I'd be out and the shoes would be fine.
I like that fine. I can understand you.
See, I think I have a male mind.
Yeah, that's part of it.
I think that, and when I was a child, I enjoyed playing with the boys because the girls were so uninteresting. I would play lady with the girls when there were no boys around. And when I was at San Mateo Junior College before I was able to go to Stanford, I used to climb the tree at noontime if I didn't go back to Mrs. Gilchrist's for lunch. I would climb the tree and eat my lunch and watch the ball game. So I've always been interested in sports, and that's what's the matter with my knees now. They've been bothering me for 20 years.
Too much athletic...
I wore my knees out.
Yes.
See, I was very good in athletics, in basketball, volleyball, and girls' baseball.
Uh-huh.
And I got my gold pins in all three.
Those would be gold pins in high school, or...?
Yes, they were given to me for my ability.
Well, in your professional life, the other aspect is teaching. With all your experience, did you connect with any of the teaching hospitals, like the University of California or
well,
anything
I didn't, because
in your
I
life?
Had, I had five things to do. That's why I can't slow down. That's why these falls. I'm so used to moving and moving quickly and doing three things at a time.
Oh, yes.
So what are the...
See, my husband never had to lift his finger or dirty his hands. So I had to look after him. Then when the girls came, they expected servants. And I was it.
They were raised in the Chinese environment, so they were used to that kind of...
No, no. When they were in Peking, when my husband was doing very well as editor for two or three papers, English paper, and he was also professor at the PUMC, I guess, or at Peking University. Whatever he was doing, it was written up in his obituary. Anyway, I didn't pay too much attention to that. He has never had to work. He used his mind only. And then the girls wouldn't get up until the last minute and then screamed at the servants to get the... That's Howard, I think. You want to take it
stop.
From
there?
Sure. Because in doing Chinese brush painting, you hold the pen, the brush, pretty much like you do when you do your Chinese writing.
Yes.
So I didn't have any trouble. Mm-hmm. But of course, when it got to the birds and the animals, I didn't do so well. So I quit. But Sam was very much against it.
You doing brush paintings?
Oh, he didn't want me to go with Harriet because it meant my getting up real early and getting down there by 9 o'clock. And then he had to eat lunch alone.
Uh-huh.
And... I felt that he was right, because I shared him with so many people.
Well, you're both public figures.
Well, he wasn't. He was pretty much a lonely man.
By that time?
No.
He was in retirement.
He came back in 49, and China was lost. And they killed his first brother in 1927.
Oh, dear.
His first half-brother.
Mm-hmm.
He was guarding the Chinese armory in Canton. And then they took his brother, Ernest, who graduated from the Ryan Aeronautic School and became aide-de-corps to General Mao of the Chinese Air Force in Washington. And he was very proud of Ernest.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernest was taken by the... a communist in 49.
And executed?
I don't know. Oh, no. He married a communist widow who had a couple of sons, I think. A nice-looking woman. And, but I understand he's dead now. Well, we never heard from him after the communist...
But he was allowed to live within their structure.
Well, here's the thing. General Chenault, he was in charge of General Chenault's air base in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
And General Chenault said, "Ernest, hang on to the last minute." Well, it was just too late.
What a tough order that is.
So he hung on and got caught. And since then my husband became what my neighbor said, withdrawn.
Noticeably, huh?
Noticeably.
Ah, that's sad.
He likes sitting alone and being alone in his house and being secure and hanging on to me, and I didn't like to make friends much. All our friends were my friends, my social friends and professional friends, and it was really sad.
Yes.
But then he was not that type. He was not the, he was no mixer.
That's hard for a diplomat, isn't it?
Well, he was in the wrong profession. He should have been a professor. He was very happy when he was a professor in Peking.
Yes.
And editor to two English papers, two or three, I remember. And then after that, you know, the Chinese government was so unstable that it was really pathetic. He went to Burma, and this is the, he had a 1928 Buick. Mm-hmm. And he had this monogram that I put on this.
Oh, I wondered what that was.
A monogram that he had on the front of his, on the grill of his car.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived up in the mountains where it was cool. But they didn't have enough money from the government to do anything. And I noticed in his little notebook, all he had down was haircuts and tiffin. You know what tiffin
no.
is? Lunch.
That's what the government would supply him for?
Well, that's all the money he had. He was using his own money.
Yes, yes.
And then he had all the kids and his two mamas and his brother and let's see what else, and the servants just to transport.
You said he was also a diplomat in Japan and in Europe. Did you accompany him?
Oh, no,
and
no, I didn't marry him until 40.
This was before.
I was age 40, 39 when I married him.
So this is before you actually married him, that
oh,
he
this
was
is
doing this.
I
yeah.
But I think, though, in the back of his mind, being brought up in Bishop Marnay's home and having his education in Europe, he was more westernized. And I think that his wife was, well, she was a social butterfly for one. She was the daughter of the minister to China and Cuba.
Oh, okay.
And when they were married, because he was Church of England and she was Catholic, they couldn't be married in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that the everything